seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
So our loyal Golf Weekly listeners were looking back on the year that was 2018. Lots of talking points. We're talking comebacks, the main man. We're talking major breakthroughs. We're talking big disappointments. We're looking at you, unfortunately, Rory. And Ryder Cups to boot. We have Fionn Davenport in Manchester. Hello.
Hello, lads.
And we have Nathan Murphy here in studio. Hello.
Hey, Joe.
We're looking back on the year that was 2018. Fionn, was it a good year? Was it an interesting year of golf on the whole? As you looked back over it, was there enough to make you go, do you know what, I enjoyed a lot of that?
Do you know what, it was a middling year with some interesting points up to the Tour Championship. I mean, yeah, there was some interesting points. I wasn't that enthused with the Ryder Cup, mostly because it felt like
you weren't there.
Kind of over. Well, that's actually true, because I wasn't there, and because it was
and because we
a foregone conclusion. Actually, Actually, you know what? It has really nothing to do with the result. It has absolutely everything to do with you two chancers being in France and me having to be here. I thought it was a middling year. Mm. I thought one lovely moment.
Go on.
Let's not.
Go on.
Well, I thought Molinari's season was fabulous. Him winning the Open was really something. And then, of course, it all kind of... I think I was getting ready for one of these like so-so seasons. And then the Tour Championship happened. And, you know, and the goose that lays the golden egg decided I'm going to lay a pretty fat one. Mm. And there you go.
Yeah, there we go indeed. So stuff I have jotted down in no particular order, but leaving our first talking point to last. Brooks Koepka. US Open win and a US PGA win. We will have to talk about Brooks. Molinari, you've mentioned. The Masters, Patrick Reed, feels like a very long time ago now. Him and McIlroy in the last pairing at the Masters. Phil Mickelson versus Tiger Woods. Phil Mickelson chasing after his ball at the US Open. Phil Mickelson winning a WGC. The world number one position has changed hands more than any time in history. 9 times this year.
Wow.
Yeah. 4 times in November. So that's a very interesting talking point. Bryson DeChambeau, worth a mention. Just the 8th player to win 5 tournaments on the PGA Tour under the age of 30. Suddenly we're taking Bryson seriously. 3 times he's won this year in a sneaky kind of way. However, Nathan, all of that pales into insignificance. 2018 was about one thing and one thing only. It was about from when he missed the cut at Riviera to almost winning at Valspar, to playing terribly at the Masters and not very well at the US Open, to then in the second half of this year, Tiger Woods, you could argue, transformed a middling year into one of the most memorable 4-month periods in golf. It was unbelievable at the time.
As was said at the time, he doesn't just move the dial, he is the dial.
Yeah.
And that was the big takeaway from this year, that you're mentioning those statistics, which are, I think we're going to have to stop talking about players doing things under the age of 30, because it's becoming a young man's game. And also the amount of times the world number one is changing hands. You need dominance. You need figures that you can get behind. And that was one of the big disappointments this year, that if we sat here this time last year and said, who's going to have a big 2018, probably would have said, Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth. Mm. Rory wins once, Spieth doesn't win at all. Dustin Johnson wins 2 or 3 times, but never looks himself. Which meant that for the first sort of 8-9 months of the year, it was ticking along okay. Koepka, you couldn't really get behind. Molinari was a nice story. It was waiting. It was wide open for Tiger to come back and steal the headlines. Mm. And everything he did for those last 6 months of the year was just drama.
It was.
From the final round of the Open, playing with Molinari, leading, not for a long period of time, but for enough to think, bloody hell, this is going to be one of the great Sundays in golf.
Amazing. Just around the turn and... The 11th still breaks my heart, where he just got too clever with his chip. He made a mistake at 11 and he wanted to save par. He should have taken his bogey. He made a mess of 11. And Molinari, by the way, did not have a single bogey across the weekend at Carnoustie. You know, it was unfathomable. I was listening to Chambly talking about Woods. He was saying, look, he's still an average driver. He's not moving into his right side and various technical issues. But he said the fact that his chipping has come back from effectively being yippy, if not full-blown yips, is akin to a miracle. Like... The sense is that 2019 could be the year of the Tiger too, Fionn.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, my overriding thought, besides being genuinely happy for Molinari, was that Tiger's performance said to me, this guy's definitely going to win again. Like, we don't know when, but it won't be that far off into the future. Mm. Now, I'm not pretending for a second that I predicted he would definitely win at the Tour Championship, or indeed that he was going to kind of give us the story that he did give us. But like, we saw enough rubbish leading up to the Open that would make us despair. But then that all kind of dissipated at the Open. And you're right, like, he got a bit clever at the 11th, but like, his general play was so good, and he built on that for the remainder of the season, that like, we got to the end of this year going, well, surely he's got to be in the five top favorites for the Masters. Yeah. Like, and not like, and that's not a romantic bet or just like, oh, it's a bit of nostalgia. It's like a genuine put your cold hard cash on the table kind of bet.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, if the driving behaves and if it's not too wet, then absolutely. I mean, it's hard to pick a moment of the year, but I do think it was when Tiger took the lead at the Open. I remember distinctly standing up, putting my hands on my head, going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, this is unbelievable. Yeah. This is going to be the greatest comeback in sport. This is unbelievable.
Yeah.
If I could just relive that 5 minutes. I mean, especially when we work in the industry, there's very, 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 I mean, it's terrible to admit, but very little that even gets more than a meh out of me, really. You know, I think about pretty much every sporting event I watch in terms of how will I cover this on the show, you know? That kind of grimness. I'm watching Spurs last night and Liverpool. I'm like, I hope they get through so we have an English side to talk about in the quarterfinals, which is quite sad. But with Woods, it was, for me, a throwback to before I worked in sport and when I just loved sport. And that was one of the very few times it happened all year.
Well, we have a situation today where Brooks Koepka was online. ESPN have released their list of athletes of the year. I think there's 25 on the list. And Brooks is not among the 25, and he's not particularly happy about that.
Has he said something?
He put up an emoji, I think it's maybe is it a confused emoji or a crying emoji, that he's not on the list.
He's right though, isn't he? I mean, he's won a second US Open, first time since 88, 89, Curtis Strange, that someone's retained a US Open. Did it in dramatically different fashion to Aaron Hills. Aaron Hills, 16 under par. This year he was plus one. And then he goes and, by the way, holds off Tiger. I mean, you're talking Tiger.
Yeah.
The USPGA was just as thrilling. He held off Tiger to win the USPGA. So
I get all that.
Yeah.
But that just sums up where golf is.
Maybe.
That he did all that and didn't make that 25 list. Simone Biles was number one. Tiger Woods wins the Open. He is number one on that list and every list.
Yeah, it's true.
That is the magnitude of what he would have achieved.
Yes, Fionn?
The counter argument to the sense that Brooks Koepka is being hard done by not appearing on the list is this. This is a guy who, I mean, can we just take it for granted that he's an exceptionally talented golfer, that he's very, very good? So there's no argument there. But he's got four PGA titles. Four. Mm. Now, three of them are majors. Mm. But he hasn't spread out that much. Like, this is a guy, like, and I know he had his injury issues. But like, this is a guy who he doesn't have like a big kind of body of work really to represent him that well. And you know, I don't know. I think on one hand, sure, he's won two majors. That's an extraordinary accomplishment for any golfer. But at the same time, it's just that, like, you know, win 15 titles and have three of those be majors.
I don't know. I think the root cause is not his body of work. I think the body of work for 28 years old is beyond exciting and passes the litmus test. I think the issue is he's a bit boring.
Well, then you can say that about most of them, can't you?
Sure, but he's got a chip in his shoulder. He's especially chippy, monosyllabic, ungiving, ungenerous, really doesn't elaborate.
But here's a funny one, right?
Yeah.
I absolutely agree with you. You can say there's a reason why him and Dustin Johnson perhaps are good friends, or maybe they aren't as good friends as the press thinks they are, but they practice together and they know each other. Dustin Johnson is monosyllabic, doesn't have much to say for himself, and generally gives the impression that he's not the brightest spark in the box. And yet I hasten to use the word charisma, but there's an allure to Dustin Johnson that really escapes Brooks Koepka. Now, maybe it's Paulina Gretzky. Maybe it's the questionable Instagram. I don't mean questionable. I mean, but like, you know, kind of the edgy Instagram posts that they put out. Maybe you get a sense with Dustin Johnson that there is a life beyond the golf course that he works very, very hard to keep us away from. But you know what I mean?
I think it's a bit of both, to be honest.
Probably
I think
is, yeah.
The Koepka is as you say, so completely lacking in emotion that there's nothing to get behind at all when he achieves these wondrous things.
And yet it probably helps him achieve the wondrous things, the lack of emotion.
Dustin Johnson, I think, has longevity. I think if you looked at... Yeah. Dustin Johnson's won, 11 years in a row now on the PGA Tour? People have got to know Dustin Johnson, as you say, because of the marriage to one of the most famous names in North American sport. They know him from that. There's the controversy surrounding him. So they've got to know a little bit of his personality or lack of personality.
Yeah.
Whereas nobody knows anything really about Brooks Koepka.
Shrouded in
aside
mystery.
From the fact now that he nearly killed somebody at the Ryder Cup.
Oh, yeah. Jeez, I forgot about that. That's unbelievable.
So did I.
Jeez, that was horrific. Can I jump in then to keep this thing moving?
Sure.
So Brooks Koepka, who I am now betting is going to emerge as the late runner from the post-Tiger generation to win the most majors. I'm putting that down.
Wow.
On the Golf Weekly record, Fionn. I know you keep a minutes after every podcast.
I do, I do.
So I'm nudging him ahead of Spieth, who I had thought for a long time would. I was going to suggest if golf needs an anti-hero, it might be Brooks Koepka. But of course, the Masters champion 2018 is already golf's anti-hero. Step forward, Patrick Reed. My overriding sense of the Reed thing, it's tied in with McIlroy's performance. So let's talk about McIlroy here too, but on Reed for a second. I remember thinking, okay, he's done really well, he's won the Masters. And then my overriding sense was just one of sympathy as the broader sports audience outside of golf were introduced to Patrick Reed as the Masters champion, quickly followed up by the way, he's a massive cheat, he had these issues at college, he's not a nice fella. And like, he was rained upon by the outside sporting world for about a week after he won the Masters, Nathan. That was my kind of memory of that week, is like almost having to defend him because I wanted to say, well, okay, yes, this stuff all happened, but we've known about this for a long time. Like, give him a break. This is his moment of glory.
And the hypocrisy of all of us who cover golf, where we've just spoken for 15 minutes about the greatness of Tiger Woods' potential comeback, and we've read this year about what sort of character Tiger Woods really is, as if we didn't know already.
Yeah.
Yet we will celebrate that.
Highlight to me was the Tiger Woods book, actually. Tiger Woods book.
Yeah, yeah. It was unbelievable. Yeah. But whereas Patrick Reed, I think it's because there's such a weight of...
Don't body shame the man.
Here, I'm in no position to body shame anyone. But that... I don't have an issue. In fact, I find that inspirational. But everybody seems to have a problem with Patrick Reed. You feel not everybody can be wrong.
Jordan Spieth won't play with him at the Ryder Cup.
And Jordan Spieth's the nicest man there is. What a beautiful
He's
person.
He's a Christian.
That's what I mean. But then at the same time, you're thinking, well, look at the way golf is... And maybe just been slightly different puts you on the outside completely.
Oh, I think that's generous to him. I think he's a bit more than slightly different, isn't he? Like, the way he behaved at the Ryder Cup press conference, while very exciting for us who work in the media, I thought was poor. Like, he was deliberately trying to, in a less intellectually impressive way or forceful way, he was trying to be Phil, but didn't actually have the brains or the cojones to actually pull off being a Phil. So it was this half-assed, do we want to do this? I remember thinking... Ugh, I don't believe that.
I'm just saying that is the slight counter of...
Sure.
Is there another side of him that we don't see or don't want to see or...
Well, there is of everyone. The case against Reed, though, based on the number of people who don't seem to like him in the game, is mounting, you would have to say. Now, Shane Lowry was in here and said he found him fine. But too many other people have raised eyebrows, to put it politely. How many majors does Reed end up, I wonder, is an interesting question.
Ooh, I wouldn't be surprised if he got to...
Five?
Five?
Ooh. Oh, I don't see him getting to five. I think maybe two
not.
Or three is probably... Really, I wouldn't go along with your Koepka's going to be the standout of this generation.
Go on, hit me.
I wouldn't be surprised if Justin Thomas won as many majors as him. I still think Spieth and McIlroy. I still have a belief inside me that Rory is somehow going to come back. Like, Rory was the story of the first 4 months of the year.
Rory has lost his advantage over the field. It's gone. It's over. They're all driving the ball as well.
I understand that. But
although he led the field in longest distance this year, 318 yards average, which is the second longest in history.
Well, I mean, of course, it's history, yes, because... Next year's going to be the longest mystery again. He hits it further than Arnold Palmer. Here's my memory of Rory then, if we kick off the Rory discussion. Goes out with Patrick Reed's last group at the Masters, wayward off the first tee, to be fair, they both were. The moment for me, another standout moment, is the second. Reed only makes a par on the par 5 second. McIlroy has 4 foot for eagle. Admittedly downhill, a little bit scary, but he was two shots back. If he gets that eagle, he goes level with Reed. He misses it. Reed walks off the Green thinking, whew, I'm still ahead. And McIlroy goes. He disappears. His shoulders go. In the end, McIlroy finished fifth. And he'd shot a 65 the day before. Now, Paul McGinley said, maybe he's tired. I'd like to know what he's doing after his round.
Why is he doing all these interviews? Remember on the Saturday night, he tried to put the pressure on Reid, which again, at the time, we all thought was brilliant. This is what we wanted, the proper duel between the two of them. But he was tied for the lead of the Masters, trying to complete a career Grand Slam with 27 holes remaining. And as you say, never put any sort of pressure on Patrick Reid at all. And the frustrating thing watching Rory all year is that he almost, when he missed that putt at the second, you could have said, that's his year gone.
I felt
shoulders
it.
Shoulders are gone. That he'd spent 4 or 5 months taking this mid-career break to look at every aspect of his life, to put himself in that position in that moment, and he didn't deliver. It felt as though he never recovered from that.
It sounds incredibly harsh to say that about him. People will say, I'll lay off. That's a bit harsh. And maybe it is. But Jordan Spieth could have had three versions happen in a row of what McIlroy did in the second green, and I would still have a sense that he's going to come again on the next hole. McIlroy, I just felt it was over.
What about Jordan Spieth's final round of the Masters?
I was just going to say, by the way, we should mention that. So birdie's the first. He went around the front nine in 31 strokes, Spieth, when he had no form to speak of for the first 4 months of the year and almost did it again. You know, I don't know, Spieth versus McIlroy. Fionn, what do you reckon long term?
It's long term. Yeah. Spieth. You know,
is
every
Peter
day
Lorre nearby, no?
It's Spieth every day of the week and twice on Sunday for the very simple reason, and the two of you have just kind of done a very good job of talking about the Reid versus Spieth or Reid versus McIlroy thing, because ultimately in the end is that Spieth is not long like McIlroy, but he doesn't have to be because he's pretty long. So in terms of length, it's fine. Like, it's not as if McIlroy has this enormous advantage over him really anymore. It comes down to the, you know, it's the real estate between your ears, isn't it? And so far, Rory, in all of his career, I'd argue, hasn't shown that the mental strength he has, and unquestionably to be the player he is, he has a certain amount of mental strength, but that others just beat him on that score.
We had our statistic, sorry to interrupt, we had our statistic friend in a couple of weeks ago. He said where McIlroy was in the putting, was it outside the top 200?
It was about 290th, was it? Well, about 440 players that they analysed.
Well, so to go back to Joe, you're talking about the putt that he missed for eagle on the second. And like you, like many fans, I remember distinctly throwing my hands up in the air and using some fairly kind of rich Anglo-Saxon English. And you could see that the annoyance that he has. I'm like, what are you doing? Just like, how can, you know, it was.
Golly
but
gosh.
Then I thought of, not me.
Hard luck.
But
right?
Then after, I was, I thought about it afterwards. And I wonder, now Rory, you know, as open as he is with the press, and certainly he's more revealing and more interesting than most other players.
Agreed.
But at the same time, he's still pretty locked in. Like, he doesn't give you that much often. And I wonder if when he missed that putt, it's not so much that he missed eagle. It's that he knew in his body that the stroke wasn't there. That he, you know, he just felt it there and then. He just goes, oh, shit, this again.
Yeah, which is
and
not.
And so now I'm going to be fighting. Yeah,
yeah, which is not uncommon in golfers. Like, so many
absolutely
of them would say they know within the first three or four holes if it's there.
Exactly.
It's just we have such expectations of him. He is so wonderful. I mean, look, he's still going. He's going to win more majors. But
of course he is.
It's just the lofty expectations seem to be dwindling all the time. We've gone from thinking will he get over 10 to now thinking
will he get 6?
Will he make 10?
Will he beat Faldo? Will he join Palmer on 7? That's where I feel it now is for Rory. Whereas 2 years ago, I felt it was, will he get to 10?
I don't think you'd find many people out there who right now would take the bet that McIlroy gets to 7.
You're saying it's odds against at this stage. What is he now?
He did still win the Arnold Palmer Invitational on the one week where the putter was hot.
I know, yeah. So it's basically his last win is that golden summer of 2014. I remember coming back from the World Cup and going into Hoylake, and then he won the WGC and then he won the USPGA. So we're into year 5 now. That's half a decade. If you didn't know what 5 years was, Nathan, just to clarify.
Just one final point about Brooks Koepka is he mightn't have made the 25 top sportsmen of the year, but he is going to win the PGA Player of the Year. Surely. Isn't he?
I mean,
he has to.
Would you give it to Tiger?
Of course he does.
Okay, yeah.
The last player not to win the PGA Player of the Year with bagging two majors in the 1 year is Nick Faldo in 1990.
Another underappreciated player, yeah. To be fair, probably. At
yeah,
the time.
Do you know who won it that year?
What year?
1990.
Greg Norman.
Wayne Levy or Levy. God.
What did he do?
I know. He won four times that year. And it goes to show you the globalized state of the modern PGA Tour, that at the time, because Faldo was seen obviously very much as a European player who came to play in America, so they ignored the European guy in favor of the local boy who won four times. Mm.
Okay. So, look, that's Rory. We've said almost the same thing about Rory every third week at this stage. Phil Mickelson had quite the year. Phil versus Tiger. We didn't talk about that, really. You watched it. It was... It was garbage.
I couldn't believe how bad it was. So we recorded here, I think, on a Thursday afternoon, the day beforehand, and about 2 hours later, it was announced that Sky were actually going to show it.
Yeah.
And as luck would have it, my wife was out that night, so I was left minding the baby, and I thought, you know what, I'll stick it on in the background.
Yeah.
It'll be perfectly fine, Friday night viewing. There'll be a couple of little nuggets. You'll be glad you watched it.
Yeah.
It was some of the most boring golf I have ever witnessed. I cannot believe that they hadn't thought it through better.
Mm.
So the whole selling point for me was, you have two of the most interesting sporting characters of the last two decades spending a lot of time together, mic'd up, and we're going to get a little bit of insight.
Yeah.
There was none of that.
Mm.
They barely spoke to each other for the 22 holes that they ended up playing.
Mm.
So it started off with Samuel L. Jackson introducing the two of them onto the tee. The whole thing, you could tell from early on, was going to be cheesy, 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 cheesy. They walk down the first fairway and they have this seriously awkward conversation about
that, yeah,
how cool Samuel L. Jackson is. And even Phil goes, I felt better after talking to him though, because he was saying his kids don't think he's cool.
Yeah.
And if his kids don't think Samuel Jackson is cool, because he's really cool.
Yeah.
And Tiger goes, yeah, he's so cool, isn't he? And Phil goes, yeah, he's really cool.
But then what happened was, there was a, no exaggeration, I watched the first three holes. So I was out on Friday night and then I recorded it and I watched the first three or four holes. Then there was a 15-second pause and Phil went, yeah, he's so cool. Yeah, yeah. Tiger said, yeah. They had nothing to say to each other.
This is what I couldn't believe, that it hadn't been somewhat scripted.
Yeah.
Or that they didn't have somebody to prod them along.
Totally. I think the latter is your safety net. I think they both realised the awkwardness and awfulness of the first fairway was so horrific that they stayed clear of each other as much as possible. Fiona, I don't know how many holes you stuck with it for. I did three or four.
I watched most of it, actually. Oh,
well, I watched.
I couldn't believe at 1:10 I was still up watching them in the darkness. And I'm not exaggerating. A made-up hole that they literally cut right there and then.
I WhatsApped you to see did it improve, and the word was no, so I thought I can't keep watching it.
Do you know, there was a couple of things. I echo exactly what Nathan said. And also the whole Samuel Jackson is like, no, you don't think Samuel Jackson's cool. You think his character in Pulp Fiction is cool. Yeah. This is a guy who wears a Kangol backwards. That's like, if that's your idea of cool, what do you like? But the broader issue. So, do you know what I thought? And I know when we previewed the thing, we talked about how unedifying and how vulgar the whole thing was. I tell you, even in my most cynical
that is
self,
cynical. That is,
yeah, I mean, didn't realize quite how vulgar it would be. Like, you know, when they were at the par three, Nathan, you watched this because we were texting, I think. And at the par three, when they did the little side bet and they went 200 like this. And I thought, $200, that's, and I was like, 200K. And I was like, you're just a pair of assholes, the two of you. Now, having said that, I realize that it's all meant to go for charity. But, you know, the thing we said in the preview, it wasn't their money. They didn't care. They weren't invested in it. They didn't trash talk each other. They made a couple of really lame jokes. And then,
Phil, just to stop you for 1 second. Did you not think they were invested in it? I actually did think part of the problem was on the back nine, that they were a little bit too invested in it.
Yeah.
That suddenly it became serious in terms of the 9 million quid and Phil's desperation to win it.
Did you get that feeling? Oh, yeah, maybe. Well, I thought that Tiger seemed, I just think Tiger, I lost 9 million.
Well, they both played such terrible golf as well.
That was established in the first four or five holes. I mean,
it was awful.
Tiger Woods was coming at you if you were on the right-hand side of the golf course.
To be honest, I still can't believe it was about 20 past one Irish time when it finished up.
Oh, God.
And I went to bed. Jeez. And I honestly still believe that when I woke up, I would see Phil Mickelson, the hero of the hour, has given $9 million to charity.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because that's the type of guy he is. I was assuming still that this was what would happen.
Yeah.
But Phil has just pocketed the $9 million.
I know.
He's having a great Christmas.
It's unbelievable. When
they played that made-up hole, and I think did they both have lob wedge? Because whatever it was.
Oh, it was like 96 yards.
For Tiger to go long, the first time, fine. To go long exactly the same way the second time is unforgivable. I'm sorry. Even I know I'm in no position to critique the greatest golfer that's ever lived. And but, you know, seriously, I was like, Tiger, that's just garbage.
Here's how rubbish. Bad the golf was, Joe.
Yeah.
Charles
Barkley
was slagging them off.
Yeah.
And even Darren Clark was slating them from about six holes in. Even Darren Clark couldn't fake it anymore. This is actually really, really poor.
Yeah, they would have both missed the cut on a standard PGA Tour event.
I didn't think Darren brought a lot to the thing. I thought he was awful in commentary.
Oh, everything about it was awful. So that's the postscript to Phil's year. He did win a WGC, which was kind of a thrill. And in the midst of it all, lost his mind on a USGA green and ran after his ball and then wasn't disqualified.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I mean, that is another, like, unbelievable moment.
That's a pretty that's a good moment. Who
was he playing with again?
The insider trading, though. So.
Yeah, who was he playing with? Was it Beef? I think Beef just started laughing.
It was Beef Johnson. Yeah, that's right. Oh, yes, Phil. It was. Oh, my God, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, well, that's one of Phil's defining moments of the year until he won $9 million.
There was some interesting, just before we get on to Joe, I'm sure you'll want to be talking about DeChambeau and Molinari, but this is an interesting one. Not really that much. Well, do you know how many PGA Tour events were won in a playoff this year?
12.
You've seen that stat, haven't you?
I just guessed randomly.
That's actually really good.
There's no way he guessed.
I did.
12.
Did you guess that?
It was 12. That's actually, I believe him because we don't tend to lie to each other that much.
I also wasn't that worried about getting it wrong.
Yeah, but no, it is. So like fully a quarter of all the PGA events this year finish in the playoff.
Shows how tough it is to win. The margins are insane, aren't they?
Yeah, and yeah, that's right. And yeah, there was, anyway.
That's a good stat. A quarter, right, okay.
Yeah. There you go.
One point going right the way back to what you were talking about at the start and the type of year it was for golf and been a so-so year. I wonder, is this going to be the problem for golf over the next little while? You look at the way the schedule is changing. It's becoming a six-month-a-year sport. If we had sat down here the Thursday after the Tour Championship and said, what kind of year has this been? Or the day after the Ryder Cup, and everything is a bit fresher in your memory and there's a little bit of excitement and there's a storyline. We've had nothing to get behind for the last 3 months.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to really get excited about for the next 4 months until the Masters. A little bit of build up. We'll enjoy Hawaii. You'll enjoy Pebble Beach. But still, these aren't the defining moments of the year. That it's become very, very condensed.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's an issue. It's going to be an issue for golf. It really is.
Yeah.
And McIlroy's scheduling, I guess, is part of that, you know. I mean, Molinari, I guess it is worth mentioning. He's not super exciting to talk about, is the problem with Molinari. I've nothing much to say about him. We've talked about Alred and his approach. And, like, if we were sitting here last year, we would not even have predicted Molinari would do a quarter of what he's done. So 35 years of age, he chased down Rory at the BMW at Wentworth. Then he went to the Quicken Loans National a few weeks later and won in the States and ignored, you know, the Ryder Cup plea to play in Paris. He went and won in the Quicken Loans and then he won at Carnoustie, no bogey all weekend, played with Tiger on the Sunday. Then he went to the Ryder Cup, we know what he did there. And then he topped it off by winning the race to Dubai finale. So it's extraordinary from Molinari. The interesting thing is to see, does he maintain this level for 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, I thought the reason why the story really kind of stood out to me was that, and I say this without, there was a hint of the everyman about him. You know, he's like, he wasn't the most athletic guy, although he did go to the gym more this year. He's added, did he add 20 yards to his drive? So there's a sense of like a little bit with Spieth, what makes Spieth such a remarkable character, I think, in golf is that he's not the longest. He has this kind of slightly peculiar swing that's not the most graceful or the prettiest, but yet he just has his ability to kind of dig it out of the dirt and just find the win when he has to. And I thought Molinari displayed an awful lot of that this year as well, is that all of a sudden, yes, this kind of, as he kind of almost like waddled a bit like up each fairway, doesn't have much to say. I agree. He's not the most exciting or interesting guy, but it's precisely that he just comes across as your kind of just your ordinary Joe, every man, and yet he a world beater. I just thought that was a lovely story this year.
Yeah, no, agreed, totally. On your wider point, as we bring this to a close, I don't know, is it just me? But my kind of obsession with golf is being reduced increasingly down to the majors, actually. I just am not finding myself as grabbed by a PGA Tour event, even on a Sunday night. Now, that may be personal. And I find when I play more in the summer, I'm much more inclined to watch. That may purely be just me. I don't know.
I think maybe that feeds into what we were just saying. That, yeah. Well, listen, let's see how you are come February and people's lives change and your pattern of work changes and sometimes you go back into your routine of being in the Sunday night and it's the perfect Sunday night entertainment. But presumably one of the reasons they are actually condensing it is because they've looked at the way sport is going, and if they can hold people's attention for those 6 months, that's all they're going to care about.
Yeah, and it is a brilliant 6 months. I mean, there is a lovely time in the summer when you seem to be hopping from a major to a WGC to a big event to another major, and that's exciting, but it's not something really sustainable across 12 months.
Why do you think it's the lack? Sorry, I'm just wondering if it is that, so Tiger is back, is it a lack of personalities? Is there a lack of, as I say, that dominant figure? If Tiger comes back and wins his first two tournaments in February, is everybody watching every Sunday night again?
I don't know. Yeah, yes. No, absolutely. Like, don't get me wrong. I was on holiday in Mallorca when Tiger won the Tour Championship and brought a, in theory, a romantic dinner, cut it right short to go to... To cut it to the
in theory, in the first place, with a romantic dinner.
The aim was, but it, you know, maybe it didn't
no
happen.
Dessert, Kiwi. Come on, let's go.
But you know, and walked walked over to the Irish bar in Mallorca, not a bastion of culture or good smells, but went there to watch Tiger win the Tour Championship, and the whole pub was gripped. So, there is still a massive love for it. I just think over the last 2 years, there have been so many no-name winners on the PGA Tour.
That's it.
Just these guys, I can't care about anymore. With names that are bizarre, I mean, just really strange, odd names, golf seems to attract them. Whereas, maybe it ties in with your point about the world number one. There was a narrative, admittedly, Tiger is always going to be a big story, but there was a time when it was, who could stop Tiger in a tournament? Is Tiger going to win this week? And if Rory's playing and he's in the mix, it's can Rory win? But I just find the amount of no-name winners over the last 2 years feels to be bigger than ever.
Are they no-name winners, or is there just this transition at the moment that the older lads are moving on,
maybe.
Phil, Furyk, the players that we've grown up with for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And again, it all feeds into the same thing, that you need time to get to know
the new person.
I even feel I like Justin Thomas a whole lot more this year than I did this time last year.
I've
seen him. I kind of know a bit more about him. I've seen a lot of interviews. He's very impressive. There's a bit of humour to him. There's a bit more personality than I'd imagined.
Yeah.
And that we're not seeing, because they're probably playing not enough tournaments.
That is the biggest problem in golf. I think they're playing fewer tournaments, or it feels that way anyway.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I think, Joe, your sense of not enjoying your workaday tournament as much as you might have done a few years ago, I think that's more a reflection of how the players treat these so-called workaday tournaments. Like, you know, the standout guy, like Tiger Woods, played as hard in the Canada Open as he did in the Open because he wanted wins. He wanted his 82 wins or whatever it is he's got. And whereas you get the feeling with the top guys these days is that they're kind of, they don't care so much about anything. They'll play their sponsor's event because they have to. And really they're just warming up to WGCs, majors, and the rest of it doesn't seem that exciting to them. So as a consequence, you have these fields that are deep in unknowns, or you know, newcomers, of which, as Nathan says, one or two might certainly emerge over the coming years and really stand out. But at the moment, it is this weird thing, and you know,
part of the general trend in sport. I'm sure when Steve Stricker and Jim Furyk came on the scene, the Parallel Universe podcast, Golf Weekly, was saying, man, they don't make him like Trevino and Palmer anymore. Like, who are this new generation? They're boring as hell. And I think they were right. I think, like, Jim Furyk and Steve Stricker are not as exciting as Trevino and not as open as the previous generation. And what we've just had now is the continuation of this trend where the new guys are even 10 times more robotic, 10 times more closed off to the media. I actually do think it's getting worse. I think it's all more PR managed and Instagram-y and Twittery. So I'm not as invested in any of them, I find.
No, I agree. I agree.
Yeah, I fear that that's I'm going problem. To be stuck backing and rooting for Spieth for the next 5 years.
Probably.
And nobody else is going to come and earn my affection.
The way we love Spieth. Now, look, I guess that proves the point otherwise. Spieth is, what, 22, 20, 25 now? Mm. He's come on the scene and grabbed us all. So maybe there's hope. But I still know the no-namers that will be playing in whatever PGA Tour event is on in February. I would trade them all for Steve Stricker versus Jim Furyk in the last group.
Oof. You're really building up Steve Stricker here.
I love Steve Stricker.
Yeah, like, I know you love Steve Stricker, but come on. Come
what
on.
What about poor old Bryson DeChambeau?
Yeah, I'm interested in Bryson. I'm interested in Bryson. So, I mean, he's won 8 times now. He was number 5 in the world rankings. So, you know, he's a sneaky year of winning 3 times. That's a great year. Bryson win a major. Ricky Fowler going to win a major soon. All those stories
are still ongoing. Is he?
I said he's got to. Not he's gonna. He's got to.
Yeah.
Ricky Fowler, oh my God, he's just so impressive on the range. He's just such a good player.
Was the highlight of the year standing within 5 feet of Ricky Fowler or standing within 5 feet of Phil?
Oh, watching Phil crumble. Oh,
that was
quite extraordinary. You know, it was just, I've never seen a sports person basically at such a big event talk privately and say, I'm screwed.
Have either of you played any golf, though, lately?
No, and that often has a very straightforward relationship with my watching of golf. Mm. So there is that. There is that.
I played last week with my father-in-law, and I must say I realized that, like, and I'm not watching as much golf.
Is that a sneaky way of mentioning that you have a wife?
Oh yeah. Okay. Sure. Let's go with that. No. I thought you were going to go. I'm going to go deeper.
Have we mentioned that Fionn no longer has a girlfriend?
Yeah, we mentioned you were married, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. It's a sneaky way of me telling you that I bogeyed the first hole and then got 8 pars in a row.
Oh, jeez.
Mm. Wow. Was it par 3?
No. Pitch and putt. No, it was actually, and you know what? This is the weird thing. So we were playing in Cumbria, and so it was quite fog bound, but my father-in-law loves his golf, and he was like going, come on. And I was like, we can't see 30 feet or 50 feet in front of ourselves. And he's like, you'll be fine. We'll just have a bit of fun. And so the weird thing is, the reason I think I played as well as I did is that because I wasn't ever tempted to look up and see where the ball hasn't yet gone, if you know what I mean, which is a tendency I have. So I tended to just stay down the whole time, and I ended up hitting the ball really, really well. Like, I couldn't see it, but when I walked down the fairway, there it was.
Interesting.
Just waiting for me.
Yeah,
it was brilliant.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. Mm.
So, and it was nice to do that in front of my father-in-law.
No, sure, listen. He sees you as more of a man now.
He sees me as a man now, not as more of a man.
So are we...
What did you shoot in your front nine? 37?
I had 37 on my front nine.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So yeah, it was bizarre.
70.
And it's the funny thing is, we played a match play, and he was, you know, he's competitive, but in a good way. You know, he doesn't get annoyed, but, like, you know, you can tell that... Like, he's not one of those guys that's like, oh, it's fine. Whoever wins is, you know, it's important. But at the same time, he shakes hands and congratulates you at the end. But about the 7th hole, I did something. He was really kind of perturbed with himself. He wasn't hitting the ball that great. And he goes, and so by this stage, see, because I beat him 5-4, whatever it was. And he says, and I says, you know, I've parred every hole bar the first. And he just looks at me and he went, oh, actually, that makes me feel a hell of a lot better. So,
nice
anyway.
Plan. That's good.
There you go.
Yeah, very impressive.
That's what I was asking. That was my circuitous way of saying, hey, I played some really good golf this week.
Yeah, I'm a bit concerned that while we're here not playing golf, Fionn is over in Cumbria playing 5 times a week and is going to reemerge in the spring a different
Indeed.
Golfer than we last saw.
Well, yeah. I mean, we'll see.
I think we are at an end of our 2018 brief chat of the year, our fireside Christmas chat.
Oh, yeah. Thing of beauty.
You can listen to this, I suppose, at any stage between now and about a week before the Masters, really.
Peter Laurie didn't make it.
When we're back in studio.
Peter, I presume, is just dialing up Brooks, saying, when's the interview happening?
It's a good job we weren't reliant on Peter.
He did
today.
Just text me saying, I'm sorry, I got held up.
No kidding.
Yeah.
He'll be back next time.
He's well without the Obama 50-minute grace window.
He's outside of that, yeah. He's outside of that. The listeners don't even know what that's about because that was in our first effort at recording, believe it or not.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Okay.
Oh, well. Doesn't matter. They'll just have to wonder. I'll tell. Obama doesn't count being 15 minutes late as being late. That's his window. We were talking about that on a full start of a podcast earlier on. Anyway, I've digressed for too long. Fionn, thank you very much for everything all year. Been a pleasure.
Thanks, guys. Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.
Cheers, Fionn.
Nathan Murphy.
See you, Nathan.
Thank you,
Joe.
Thank you. It's been...
Oh, well, it's been.
It's been. It's happened. We will be back, I presume, in the new year at some stage. Hawaii swing.
Tournament of Champions.
Yeah.
Rory's playing.
There we go.
Be all over that jazz.
Yeah. Okay, he should light it up there. I mean, that was just made for his driver. Okay, have a great Christmas. Thanks for all the tweets and listens and downloads all year. Obviously, we appreciate very much. And we'll talk to you in the new year. Good luck. All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket now. Little JD starter kit right here.